This is episode number 106 with Bill Harris. Welcome to the School of Greatness. My name is Lewis Howes, former pro athlete turned lifestyle entrepreneur. And each week we bring you an inspiring person or message to help you discover how to unlock your inner greatness. Thanks for spending some time with me today. Now let the class begin. Everyone, welcome back to the School of Greatness podcast. Very excited about today's guest. His name is Mr. Bill Harris, and he is the president and director of Centerpoint Research Institute. And today, nearly 2 million people in 193 countries have used Centerpoint programs to improve their lives, and he has become one of the best-known personal growth teachers in the world. He's got a very specific training that is all about meditation and awareness. And I'm excited to dive into this topic today because I do a lot of meditative practices in my daily life and my daily rituals. And whenever I'm applying meditation in my life, I always find I get better results. I always feel better grounded and I'm more connected to my vision. So I'm very excited to learn more about the research behind this, how he does it a little differently with his programs, and how you guys can take access to all the things that he's been teaching over the years as well. So I'm very excited about this. Let's go ahead and dive in today's episode with the one and only Bill Harris.
Apple Card is the perfect cash back rewards card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval. Terms apply. I don't know about you, but when around 3 p.m. hits, I find myself craving the right refreshment to get me through that mid-afternoon slump. New Pure Leaf Zero Sugar Sweet Iced Tea is full-flavored sweet tea, but without the sugar and the calories. It might take several bottles for you to believe that a delicious sweet tea can really have zero sugar and zero calories. But you know what they say, life is full of surprises. Or in this case, full of flavor. New Pure Leaf Zero Sugar Sweet Iced Tea. Try it to believe it. For 20% off your next 12 pack, head to Amazon and use promo code 20PureLeaf. That's promo code 20PureLeaf for 20% off. Okay, quick math. The less your business depends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. Obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite, and you're improving efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/greatness. netsuite.com/greatness. Again, head to netsuite.com/greatness.
Welcome back, everyone, to the School of Greatness podcast. Super excited about this one. I've got Mr. Bill Harris on. How's it going, Bill?
I'm great. I really appreciate your invitation to talk to your folks.
Yeah, I'm excited. We connected briefly at Dave Asprey's event. And that's when I really started to get to learn about you more. I started checking out your website and researching some of your materials, and you've created an impressive resume of success for, you know, yourself and your business. And you've done a lot of programs and trainings. One of the cool thing that we have in common is you studied at Berklee College of Music, and my brother was actually a professor of jazz there a number of years ago as well. So we kind of have you know, some points of connection there. And I know you're a, you know, a musician still, and you have CDs and you're still putting it out there, which is, I think, is incredible.
It's a guitarist, your brother, isn't he?
He is a jazz violinist.
A violinist. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Jazz violin.
Yeah, they have two albums that are out now that are still getting radio airplay.
Wow.
The first, I think these came out in maybe 2012 and 13 or something like that. I forget now the exact year, but the first one launched at number 3 nationally in radio airplay, and the second one launched at number 4 in radio airplay. And I still get emails from radio stations with their playlists telling me that they're playing certain cuts from these albums.
Wow. Very
cool. I wish I had more time to pursue promoting that part of my life, but that's
right. It's more of a passion hobby, right? On the side.
I play a lot. I probably practice about 30 hours a week.
Wow. That's cool.
I play a lot, but I haven't had time to, I've had enough time to get the album so that they're being played a lot in radio stations, but I haven't monetized it so that I'm selling a lot of the albums.
Gotcha. Gotcha. You've done a good job monetizing your other business though. And, you know, that's what I wanted to ask you about today, which is, I heard about this Holosync solution, which is kind of like one of the main courses that you provide, which is a sound technology. Isn't that correct?
Yes.
Now, what is that exactly, and why'd you get into creating this?
Well, I'll just kind of give you the backstory. I grew up in kind of a dysfunctional, broken home. I was grew up pretty angry, difficult to get along with, rough around the edges, depressed a lot. And when I was about 19, somebody suggested that I should meditate, and that might help. So I started meditating, traditional meditation, and I did that for 16 years and got very deeply into that, was very disciplined about it, and got a certain amount of benefit from it. But quite frankly, 16 years later, when I was in my mid-30s, I was still pretty angry, pretty rough around the edges, pretty difficult to get along with, drove a lot of people away in my life, not a real happy camper. And about that time, I ran into, I took all kinds of sciences in college, all the pre-med sciences. So I had a very scientific bent and was paying attention to a lot of scientific research that was going on in different areas. And one of them was meditation, because I was interested in that. So there were two bits of research that caught my attention that turned out to really change my life, and actually the lives of a lot of other people. One of them was that in the 1970s, the world famous Menninger Clinic, and then also the transcendental meditation people to a certain degree too, figured out what the electrical patterns in the brain were that people were making when they were meditating. So that was known by the mid-70s at least. Then I stumbled on this article by this researcher at Mount Sinai Medical Center in New York, a guy named Dr. Gerald Oster, which was describing a characteristic of the brain that when you presented certain pure sine wave tones of certain combinations of frequencies using headphones so that you could target the, you know, each side of the brain independently, it would change brainwave pattern. The long short of it was a way that you could change the electrical patterns of the brain. And this guy gave no use for this. It was a very abstruse kind of article for people that were, I don't even know what field people would be interested in that sort of thing. He didn't say you could use this for X, Y, or Z. But I looked at this and I said, these are the brainwave patterns of meditation. And this is a way to change brainwave patterns. Could I change them to those of meditation? And what would that be like? And would it give the same benefits? You know, and there's, by the way, there are also brainwave patterns of accelerated learning, enhanced activity, and a bunch of other things like that. And there are even brainwave patterns of anxiety or depression or motivation. There's a brainwave signature to many, many mental abilities and human emotions and so on. But I was interested in meditation. So anyway, I was a graduate student in music at the University of Portland. I went into their engineering lab talked the head of the department into lending me a bunch of equipment that I didn't really know anything about using and bought a couple of other little things. And in my basement, I started making these cassette tapes because it was before CDs that had this technology on it. And with a couple of friends, we started listening to it. And the first time we listened to it, I'll never forget, we, you know, at the end of a half hour, we opened our eyes and sort of looked at each other, and we were kind of in this tranced out state, kind of high on our own neurochemicals. And one of the other guys said, "Are you feeling what I'm feeling?" And and I said, "Yeah, wow, this is pretty amazing." And I mean, it really worked. It really changed, you know, we were sort of blown away that you could just listen to something for 30 minutes and have your state change so dramatically. And we were experienced meditators, so we knew what we were feeling. And it was really beyond what we could do doing traditional meditation. But what really blew us away was that then over time, as we continued to do this, and more people started doing it after, by the end of about 4 years, just through word of mouth, we had about 150 people experimenting with this, mostly in the US, but there were probably 20, 30 people in Europe too. And over that time, I'll just give you my experience, all this anger I'd always had just sort of dissolved. I stopped being depressed. My mind started to become so, I just had this infusion of mental clarity, an ability to focus and concentrate. I became more creative. My music became better. I became, people would come up to me and say, "What are you doing? You seem so mellow," when before I'd say, "You are so intense." And wow. So just everything changed for me. And after, at about the 4 year marks, a bunch of these people that were using it, you know, before I'd ever started selling it, they said, "You should create a structured way to use this and create a company and sell it." And I had very little ambition in terms of making money. I wasn't even thinking about a business. At the time, I was making about $30,000 a year. And I thought, if I could just make another $30,000, I would double my income. That would be amazing. And so I didn't know much about running a business or anything. And I think the first year we had a whopping $12,000 in sales. And the second year was about $48,000. And then it went up to about $250,000. And then it went up to $750,000. And then the year after that, it went over $1 million. And then it just started going up and up and up from there. And part of it was that I studied marketing with some of the top direct response marketers. And I began to learn more about running a business and all of this. And it eventually got bigger and bigger and bigger. And, you know, all kinds of things happened.
Really quickly, why do you think, why is this using the sound technology included in meditation more effective than just no sound and meditating without it?
That is a very good question. And, you know, I have lots of people that are traditional meditators that are initially skeptical about this. And actually, I was too. But I'm interested in results.
Right. Who is it?
I started to see the results. I was very convinced. And some of the results we got, by the way, were, you know, you read these books about meditation, and I will get back to your question. You read these books about meditation, and they describe all this stuff that's supposed to be happening. And then you go to meditate, and instead of that, you're sitting there going, how long has it been?
Right. You're thinking about everything else besides meditating.
My leg hurts. What's that sound out there? Oh God, I got to get eggs and milk at the store, you know, and, and you're hardly meditating. You're just thinking about a lot of stuff.
You're getting more frustrated.
But when we, you know, and we were kind of beyond that point because we'd all been meditating a long time, but there's all kinds of sort of, you might call them mystical sort of things that happen to people when they're meditating. And we started using this sort of proto holosync, and lots of those things suddenly started to happen. Things that nobody would know about, even if they hadn't read all this literature about meditation. So that was pretty convincing too. But here's the deal. With traditional meditation, there's a long learning curve. It's hard to do at first. You are, you know, focusing on something in most meditation techniques. And it's hard to stay focused on that. It takes a lot of time to get good at it. And during that time, you're not really spending much time in that meditative state. You're not really getting many of the benefits, and it can be frustrating, et cetera, et cetera. So most people, even that they've learned a lot about meditation, and they're convinced that, oh, wow, the benefits of this are enormous. The scientific research on meditation over the last 10, 15 years is amazing. What they have found, all the things, we can talk about that in a few minutes. But so anybody that looks at that goes, geez, I should be doing this. Mm. But then when you start to do it, it's very difficult. And most people just quit before they get any of the benefits. So when you use this type of meditation where you are creating the, essentially what you're doing is creating the brainwave patterns of someone who's been meditating for 30 years. So right out of the gate, you are in this very deep meditative state. And every time you put those headphones on and push the play button, you're going there. So yeah. It's very consistent. You bypass the learning curve and you start to get reinforcement right away.
Yep.
It's very effortless. You don't have to do any. A lot of people who do this do like repeat a mantra or watch their breath or do those sorts of things. Partly because some of them have been doing that for a few years if they're already meditating. And I do that while I'm using it, but it's more from habit than anything else.
Right.
So that's it in a nutshell.
Yeah. And the cool thing about, just to speak into that, you know, I've never really been able to do, I guess, traditional meditation without some type of guidance, without some type of, audio follow along or follow through, because whenever I try it, my brain is really hard for me to just shut down and be silent. And, you know, it just has too many thoughts. But when I was 18, or I think I might've been 19, I started listening to a guided visualization meditative, like audio track that my sister Heidi gave me. And I realized that I didn't have to think about what to being empty minded or not think or let it wander or whatever. I just got to follow along and allow my brain to relax, allow my body to relax and follow along with the music, be relaxed in the music and follow along with the guided visualization and meditation. And for me, I felt like that was effective to get me the results that I was looking for. And it helps me relax.
The kind of stuff where you're really focusing on something like focusing on your breath or repeating a mantra is really more effective than a guided meditation sort of thing. But it does take a certain amount of practice. There are some misconceptions about that, though. For instance, anybody, when they start meditating, will have lots of thoughts coming to the surface.
Right.
Because that's part of the process. And a lot of people think, well, that's not supposed to happen.
Mm.
So I must be doing it wrong. And then they kind of give up. I remember Maharishi, the TM guy, he used to say that these thoughts coming up at the surface are really stresses in your nervous system that are sort of bubbling up to the surface and being released. Now, there's a more scientific version of what he was saying, but it's true. People have, there's a lot of sympathetic nervous system activity, which is the source of fight or flight and hyper awareness and things like that, that kind of have to be calmed. What traditional meditation and holosync in spades does is it accentuates your parasympathetic nervous system, which is the source of what Herbert Benson at Harvard called the relaxation response.
Mm.
It's what gets enhanced when people are, you know, really accomplished at meditation. It's what calms the stress response, lowers cortisol levels in your blood, and all that sort of thing. So that's one thing that happens. Your parasympathetic nervous system is enhanced, but also all kinds of beneficial neurochemicals, you make more of them. Things like cortisol, which is the stress hormone, very bad for your health if you have too much of it. It's useful in certain amounts, but that goes down. Also, way more brain real estate is turned over to executive function or awareness. in the prefrontal cortex. And then also there's all these connections between the left side of the brain and the right side of the brain. So people develop what some people call whole brain functioning or whole brain thinking, where sort of like thinking in stereo, where you're using more of the whole brain to process whatever's going on. And then there's also more connections between the more primitive part of the brain, the amygdala, where people have, you know, reactive emotional stuff happening, and the prefrontal cortex. So that if something scares the crap out of you, instead of being really reactive, your prefrontal cortex has that connection and it can say, you know, there's nothing to be afraid of here. I mean, if there is something to be afraid of, then run like hell, I guess. But but in many cases, you know, somebody says something to you and you lose your temper. Something I used to know quite a bit about. You see, when you have more of this executive control, more of this prefrontal cortex activity connected to that part of the brain, then you are able to exercise. You know, that's why, you know, you meet some guy that's been a Zen monk for 30 years. He has this calmness and this equanimity, and he's not triggered by stuff that happens in the same way. The great thing about Holosync, you know, we have had over 2 million people use this in 193 countries over the last really 29 years. If you add the 4 years of kind of researching it before I started the company, and our best estimate of how well this works is that it gives the same benefits as traditional meditation, but about 8 times faster.
Wow.
So that if you do this for 2 years, it's kind of like meditating in a traditional way for 16 years.
Wow.
So
interesting.
People that don't know anything about meditation, they don't know anything about all the literature about meditation or Eastern philosophy or any of that stuff, they start saying and describing the same experiences to us without ever having heard of them anywhere else that people report when
interesting.
They meditating for several days, and same kind of responses to the stimuli in their life.
One of my favorite parts about my job is that I get the opportunity to travel a lot. And in fact, I'm recording this right now while I'm in Mexico. And actually, I was thinking about something that I wanted to share because I get a lot of questions from so many people about different side hustle ideas. So here's one for those of you out there that are on the go a lot like I am or traveling a lot. When you're staying in your Airbnb on your trips, have you ever thought about how you could be making extra money by hosting through Airbnb while your home is vacant? If you're interested in an extra stream of income, Airbnb hosting is an easy place to start, and it's like giving your home some company while you're away. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
So listen, we all know life is full of yada yada, like those quote unquote free trials that somehow still charge your card for something, or when companies have those sneaky gotchas hiding deep in the fine print. And I know you've dealt with yada yada before, like those bills that keep going up and up for no reason at all, or when budget airlines promise a cheap fare but then charge you for every little thing until you realize you're paying more than you would have somewhere else. And yes, it is possible to outsmart yada yada, like triple checking airline deals to make sure all you need is already included, but you don't take yada yada in life, so don't take yada yada from your wireless provider. Metro by T-Mobile has no contracts, no credit checks, no surprises, and nada yada yada. Stop by one of over 6,000 Metro stores nationwide. When you get a new car or a new home, your first reaction might be to say things like, oh yeah, or I can't believe it, or booyah. But what you really want to say is the one thing that can get you the help you need. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. State Farm is there with the coverage you need for your car, your home, and even boats, motorcycles, RVs, and other things that matter to you. With a State Farm agent, you know someone is there to help you choose the coverage you need. With so many coverage options, it feels good knowing you can find what fits for you. And when you need ways to get help, State Farm gives you options there too, in person or on the phone with your local agent, or on statefarm.com, where their award-winning app State Farm lets you do things your way. So when you need help protecting the things that matter most, remember to say, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Interesting. I like that. And you're gonna send us over a demo that people can listen to, so it'll be linked up with the show notes on, you know, a little sample of this. So make sure to check that out. I'll let you guys know what that link is later for the show notes.
Absolutely. People can go on our website and they can listen to a soundtrack that's about 20 minutes long, I think, and experience for yourself what, you know, it would be like if somebody's told you all this great stuff that would happen if you exercised regularly and then you exercised once. You know, you obviously can't tell everything that's
going to happen. But it'd be a great teaser.
I mean, you can do it more than what you can do this demo, of course, more than once too.
Sure.
But it's pretty amazing how just listening to something, same thing we had at this initial experience.
Sure.
It's pretty amazing how this changes how you feel so much. I have a lot of people that just listen to that demo and then they write me and say, my God, for the rest of that day, I just felt fantastic.
Wow. Interesting. I love this. I definitely recommend everyone checking it out and seeing what they how they feel and what they experience as well. And I want to speak into, you talked about awareness for a second, and I want to speak into awareness because I my guess is that's really kind of the point of meditation, is to develop better awareness of ourselves in our environment and in our situations and our life and the world. And why is awareness so powerful for our life and for being successful?
Well, I'll tell you, I started thinking about awareness, first of all, because I was trying to figure out over like more than 25 years now, what exactly is happening when people are listening to Holosync. Because I mean, one of the reasons why this has been such a hugely successful business is because the product is so amazing. The product works so well. I mean, I have good marketing too, but when you have a product that works well and you know how to market, that's a really a winning combination. And I could send you tens of thousands, literally, of letters from people saying, God, this saved my life. This totally changed everything for me. And this saved my son's life, on and on and on and on. It's a really pretty amazing. So at any rate, I was thinking, what is happening? And I went through several iterations over the years of how I kind of described what was happening. When I say awareness, I don't mean something sort of fluffy. There's a very precise scientific definition of this. And it does have something to do with some of the stuff I was saying earlier about the prefrontal cortex and the left and right hemispheres being more connected to each other and so on. If I had to say something about awareness two statements about awareness. First of all, I often say awareness provides the solution to every human problem that has a solution. Some human problems don't have a solution. For instance, everything in the universe is impermanent and eventually falls apart or passes away or ends or whatever. And you're not going to do anything about that. And there's plenty of human problems that are related to that. But you can't do anything. You also can't do anything about the fact that you can't regulate what everybody else does. People have their own agenda. And a lot of times other people's agenda is completely at cross purposes with yours. You can have a little bit of influence over other people. But almost everybody that's older than 5 years old knows that trying to get other people to comply with what you want is kind of a losing battle. You have to, there's a lot of give and take in there. But anyway, there's some things that there are some human problems that don't have a solution, but every human problem that has a solution, awareness ends up being sort of the fundamental behind all those solutions. The other thing I often say about awareness is awareness creates choice. And here's what I mean by that. Most of what human beings do in terms of how they feel, how they behave, which people in which situations they attract or become attracted to, or what meanings they assign to what's happening around them, most of that, the creation of those four things, happens on autopilot. There are certain internal cognitive processes that people are doing all the time. And those internal processes create how you feel, how you behave, which people and situations you attract or become attracted to, and what meanings you assign to whatever's happening out there. That's great as long as those internal processes were programmed by your early life experiences to work really well. But for most people, that isn't the case. Most of us, and probably really all of us, are to some extent traumatized by things that happen in our life. We don't get what we want. We get disapproved of. We make mistakes. We fail at things. We, you know, somebody doesn't like us. And in some cases with some people, that trauma is really very grim, you know, where people are really severely abused and things like that. But to that degree, those internal processes often become about being vigilant for danger, which causes people to focus on what they want to avoid instead of focusing on where they what they want to create or where they want to go. And as you and probably all your listeners know, whatever you focus on repeatedly tends to determine what happens in your life to a great degree. So when people outside their awareness on autopilot focus on what they don't want, they
get more of what they don't want.
Yeah, they get more of, and you get an extra bonus when you focus on what you don't want. You create bad feelings. Every time you're feeling a bad feeling, you can be sure that you are doing something in your head, focusing on something that you don't want, you're worried about, you want to avoid, that sort of a thing.
So let me break it down and give me an example. Let's say someone has a headache and they don't want the headache, but all they can think about is this nagging pain in their head and it won't go away. And what's something they could do, you know, something simple like that to give an example of to focus on or to be aware about or to make a decision on?
Well, I mean, the headache may be caused by something the person is doing, but it's very likely it's caused by some sort of organic thing that that they don't have that much control over. Let's just say that that's the case. You know, in Buddhism, they would call this, they call these darts. They would say the first dart is you have a headache. And that might be part of the suffering in life that you can't do that much about. I mean, there are things you can do about a headache, but, you know, sometimes you get headaches. The second dart, though, would be that you resist the fact, i.e. focus on what you don't want, and you're going, oh, I hate this. I've got to make this stop. And you're adding another layer of suffering. Now, I don't know if that's the very best example of that sort of thing, but
interesting.
You know, let's say that you're in a situation where somebody's really annoying to you, and you know, there's something going on that you don't like. If you add to that your resistance to it, you make it worse. And in fact, when you resist something, it seems like it's the thing you're resisting that is causing your suffering. But, and sometimes, like with a headache, there is some, you know, actual physical pain involved, or, you know, your car gets totaled. So that there's an actual thing happening there. But if you add to it the resistance to it, it makes it seem like the car accident caused the feeling you're having, when it's really your resistance to that happening.
The resistance to the experience.
Yeah, yeah.
You're feeling, you're just being resistant that you had to go through that experience. You're upset, you're frustrated with it. Is that what you mean?
Yeah. And I'm not saying that that isn't a normal human response.
Right.
Anybody could imagine that, the Dalai Lama could have a car accident, and some real reactive, unconscious person could have an accident, and their response to that accident would be completely different.
Right.
I mean, you know, that's how the Dalai Lama could have all these people in Tibet murdered by the Chinese and had to leave his country, and they burned down all their buildings and blah. And still the guy is happy. And I'm sure that he felt a lot of compassion and suffered himself over a lot of the things that happened. But, you know, it's not so much what happens to you as how you respond to it. So at any rate, when you're aware, you see the internal processes you're running that are creating your feelings, your behaviors, your attraction to certain people in situations, which in some cases may be people in situations you don't want to end up in, or the cues you give off that attract certain people to you. And then also you see how you're creating and adding meaning to something that happens, which is a really important thing too, because if you walk into a room and you go up to somebody and you want to meet them and you start talking to them and they spurn you in some way, you might say, I'm not very likable, nobody likes me, and you go into this really sad, depressed sort of state, but it could be something really horrible just happened to that person and has nothing to do with you at all. You know, there's different interpretations, different meanings you could add. And certainly when people are trying to be successful and then they have a few setbacks, they think, well, okay, I wasn't meant to do this. I've never succeeded this. Whereas somebody else says, hey, setbacks are part of achievement. I just had two of them. What can I learn from it? And a completely different way of attaching meaning to something. And the second person goes on to become more and more wise and successful when the other person feels like quitting. Mm-hmm. So at any rate, the idea is that when you have a lot of awareness, which is created by traditional meditation and even more quickly by holistic meditation, you begin to see the ways that you have been creating feelings you don't want, behaviors you don't want, or sometimes it's failing to behave when you've decided you want to act, but then you don't, like when you learn a whole bunch of success principles and then you go home and you're all excited, but you don't do anything, right, which a lot of people, happens with many people. Or you decide you're going to exercise, but then you don't exercise, or you're going to decide you're going to meditate, but you know, you decide you're going to eat right. All these sorts of things. Having, you know, I said earlier, awareness creates choice. So to the degree that you are aware of the internal processes that lead you to eat something you know isn't healthy, or eat more than you want to eat, or whatever, that becomes a choice. And once you have a choice, you just can't keep doing what doesn't serve you. Mm. So that's why awareness creating choice is so powerful. So at any rate, this is what happens to anybody that's a long-term meditator, is that they begin more and more to see how they're doing the things that are creating that second dart, that are causing them to heap more suffering on events that they may not have that much choice about. Although, if you have enough awareness, sometimes you end up being able to avoid people and events that are best avoided too. But at any rate, some things are going to happen in life that are unavoidable.
Sure.
But that doesn't mean you have to create bad feelings around them or bad behaviors or et cetera, et cetera. So that's really why when people meditate for a long time, they are very calm. They handle problems in a different way. It also creates, by the way, you know, a tremendous amount of mental clarity, pattern recognition, creativity, learning ability, things like that too, which I could relate to awareness too, but we don't have that
much. Sure, sure. Yeah, one of the things that I've realized is I've done a lot of work on myself in the last couple of years, specifically on letting go of some of my own, let's say, you know, demons, I guess. And my demons were defensiveness, anger, and resentment. Those were the three, I guess, things that were kind of, in one sense, driving me to be successful, but also making me feel extremely lonely, extremely unfulfilled, and hurting myself and other people around me at times. It wasn't like all the time, but this like trigger, whenever I'd be triggered, I would go into one of those three states of resentment, anger. And it was really frustrating to be that way most of my life. And when I started doing the work and diving in and being aware of why I was reacting those ways, what were the initial triggers that set me up to be that way, why I hadn't shifted out of them. Once I started to be aware, I've noticed such a shift and change in my physical health, in my energy, in my emotions, in my feelings, because I am aware in situations that used to trigger me now, and then I don't react the same way. I take a moment, I'm patient, you know, I'm relaxed, I calmly speak as opposed to raise my voice like I used to. I don't, you know, react in a negative way, and I feel like the awareness has been such a powerful thing for me to be able to respond differently in situations, like you said, right, where the Dalai Lama, you know, can react differently than someone who's not as aware. Now, why, if that is, for me, been one of the most powerful experiences over the last couple of years to understand that towards my success and relationships and business and everything, why is it that we don't learn this growing up necessarily in school, or there aren't after school programs, or, you know, our parents don't know this. How come, if this is one of the keys to being successful as a human being and being a loving, supportive, connected human being, how come we don't really learn this until it gets too late, or we go through so much pain that we discover it somehow?
Well, the obvious answer is that the people that are running those institutions haven't handled this themselves. They don't even. The thing is that, you know, in the last, since meditation became more popular and personal growth stuff became more popular, you know, it's a relatively new field. You know, more people are aware of this sort of thing, but this is not something that it's becoming more and more mainstream, but this is a fairly new thing. And certainly, I mean, I could also say that the schools, for instance, this is not their main agenda. You know, those of us who are interested in this sort of thing, the people that are listening to your podcast and the people that are using Holosync and the people that are following Dave Asprey and the bulletproof, you know, biohacking thing and all that sort of stuff, you know, that's a very tiny percentage of the people out there. Most people in the world are just trying to, you know, keep body and soul together. And even most people in the United States, as wealthy as the United States is, are not thinking about this stuff. Most people you talk to about this stuff, they don't really find it all that interesting. So that's one reason. One of the things I wanted to say about your story was there is actually, Lewis, a deeper level of what you're talking about, because finding out what triggers you is very important, and finding out, you know, discovering why you do something gives you some distance from it, but seeing how you do it and observing the internal processes. For instance, if you get triggered by something, you are making what are called internal representations inside your head, internal pictures. They kind of mirror external sensory experiences, and then there's one other one. So you could have internal pictures, internal sounds, internal smells and tastes, internal kinesthetic touch, but touch includes heat, cold, pressure, balance, in addition to the sense of touch. And then the last one is called auditory digital by cognitive psychologists, but it's just internal dialogue. It's you talking to yourself. And so if something triggers you and you start saying certain things in your head and you start making certain pictures in your head, if they are of what you don't want, which they probably would be in that kind of those situations you mentioned, then a bad feeling is created right away. You begin resisting the bad feeling, which means make more negative internal representations.
Right.
And depending on the quality of those things, you start to feel resentful or angry or whatever, you know, of those feelings that you mentioned. So what happens is that as you become aware enough to see those pictures going by and see those thoughts and see the connection to that they make, how they actually generate the feelings, the behaviors, you know, the meanings you're putting on things, that sort of stuff, they become a choice. You stop creating those things. So, I mean, you may have done these, what I'm talking about already. I'm not trying to patronize you or anything, sure. but seeing the trigger is part of it, because part of the process is there's a trigger and then there's these series of internal representations inside your head, and
sure,
there's a feeling or a decision or something. And by the way, other internal processes that are part of this kind of group would include your beliefs. Beliefs are just collections of internal representations about something you think is true. Then there are values, which is what you think is important. That's just a collections of internal representations about what you think is important. Then there's another category called strategies, which are sequences of internal representations that lead to a feeling, a behavior, or a decision. And then there's a whole set of filters, because there are so many bits of information coming in every moment that it's more than people can take in. So people delete almost all of it. If you walk into a room, you don't notice tons of things in that room. sight, sound, touch and sensations, people, noises, whatever. And you focus on certain things depending on how your internal filters are set up. And what you notice has a lot to do with how you focus your mind. And it changes in different situations. So anyway, I'm just sort of giving you a little
picture
of these internal processes. I have a course that takes about 70 hours to go through where I take people through this and show them how to observe these things, which makes them into a choice. So my elevator speech kind of is, I have this amazing tool that creates tremendous awareness, which is Holosync. And then I show people where to direct that awareness so as to give them the maximum amount of choice about how they feel, how they behave, which people and situations they attract or become attracted to, and what meanings they assign to what happens. And when people go through all this, they become, you know, this young woman that works for me likes to say people develop superpowers when they do.
Yeah.
But it seems that way.
Sure. Yeah. What's like, I've got a couple of questions left before I want to wrap things up here soon, but what is like a great ritual or habit on how to meditate daily, whether it's using your technology or meditating in general? What do you think? Is it like first thing in the morning, in the middle of the day, at night, just once a day? What's like a good habit for most people? Obviously, everyone's unique and different and may need different times and lengths of period. But what's like for the busy entrepreneur, someone who's constantly on the go, who's got a lot of ideas and wants to take action, what's a good ritual they could take on with this?
Well, that's one of the great things about Holosync, by the way. Before I answer that specific question, one of the things we found, I was a traditionalist. I was into sitting cross-legged,
right,
meditating in a traditional way, sitting up without a back support and all that kind of stuff. And we told people to do it that way for a long time. And that may still be the most effective way to do it. But what we discovered, you know, because the people that are doing this are all over the world. They're not sitting here in front of me or anything. We do have a lot of communication, but we found that a lot of people were lying down in bed listening to this. And we found that the people that woke up an hour early, didn't get out of bed, they just put the headphones on, pushed the play button, just leaned back, closed their eyes again, listened for an hour, even if they nodded out, they, at the end of that hour, they were more alert and more awake and ready to get up and feeling energized than if they'd slept that hour, and they got all the same benefits that everybody else would get doing it the other way. And they had essentially done this daily meditation without taking a single moment out of their day. Now, as to your specific, which I think is pretty amazing, takes away one big excuse that people have. I don't have time.
Right. Just do it and go back to sleep. Yeah.
When people say, I don't have time to meditate or I don't have time to exercise or whatever, it usually means I don't think the benefits of it are
valuable.
Not that I'm making it a priority.
Right.
So one of the things you have to do if you're going to have some sort of a meditation practice, all this applies to anything, so those other things that are hard to do, like exercising, for instance, is that you need to focus more on the long-term benefits than the short-term thing, like, oh, I'm too tired. You have to think, you know, if I do this every day, I am going to eventually develop an amazing equanimity, happiness, inner peace, all these things, and I want that. So I'm going to do this even though I, you know, there's a part of me that doesn't feel like it. I think some people like to listen to Holosync in the morning. Some people like to do it like right when they get home from work because it really rejuvenates you when you're wiped out at the end of the day. Some people like to do it before bed. I found that when I did it before bed, it was sort of like taking a nap. You know, if you've ever taken a nap at 9 o'clock at night and then you can't go to sleep.
It's hard to sleep, yeah.
You're sort of rested now. And
now you're up till 4 a.m.
But I've had other people say that when they did it right before bed, it helped them sleep.
Gotcha. Okay.
One of the things this does, by the way, is it kind of obliterates people's sleep problems. Mm. People that have sleep problems stop having sleep problems after a while doing this. So I do think it's a good idea to have a routine, to do it the same time as much as you can every day. And to, I tell people to make this like brushing your teeth.
I like it.
Brush your teeth as a matter of course at a certain time of day, and you don't really think about it. You don't evaluate whether you ought to do it today or not. You don't blow it off because of something else. You don't say, oh, I don't have much time, I'm not going to brush my teeth today. You just do it. And make it a part of your routine. Once something like this becomes a habit, it really doesn't take that long. You just keep doing it, and you don't think anything about it. And the whole, do I want to do it? Oh, God. And this whole decision process is this thing of the past. And you just, you're doing something that is benefiting you tremendously, and it's effortless.
I like it. Very cool. I want to ask you two final questions. Well, the first one is, what are you most grateful for recently in your life?
What am I most grateful for? You know, I think the thing I'm most grateful for are the all the people over the last 25 years that have had enough faith in me and in Holosync to take the risk to do this and to stick with it. And then, I mean, when I was kind of an asshole when I was younger, I got so much negative reinforcement from other people. And when I started doing this, after a few years, I began getting tremendous positive reinforcement. And to tell you the truth, I would cry. I used to run these retreats, and people at the end would be thanking me for it, you know, in a group setting. And it was so different than my self-image that I it just choked me up. Now I'm a little more used to it, but every time I think about, I'm 65 years old, I'm rich, I don't have to do this anymore, but I keep getting all this feedback from these people. I get letters every day from people that just blow my mind that this person who used to be such a self-absorbed asshole is now having this effect on other people's lives, and say, I don't want to stop doing this. I can't stop doing this. And I just, my whole life was transformed by Holosync and by the people who use it. And so I feel really, really grateful for that. I mean, here talking to you and getting to talk to a large group of people because of you, and I'm getting to know you. And I could tell you hundreds of people that people listening would know about that I've got to be friends with because of this. And so I've just, it's all goes back to the people who've used this. That is really
very cool. Very
I'm
cool.
Grateful to get out of bed and be alive this morning.
I like that one too. Me too. Awesome. Well, I got one final question, but I want to make sure we're going to give all of, if you can have your team send over those links to me, I'll link those up on the show notes. I'll let people know where to go to get your website, to learn more about your products, Holosync, everything that we talked about today. I'll have it linked up in the show notes, which we'll talk about here in just a second. So I want to thank you for coming on. And my final question, Bill, is what I ask all of my guests at the end of every interview, and it's, what is your definition of greatness?
I would say greatness is being more aware, and then because you're more aware, you figure out how you can make a difference in the world. That's what happens to people. Ultimately, they become so aware, they reach Maslow's self-actualization stage. And there's nothing to do then but make a difference in the world, to alleviate the suffering of other people, to try to make the world a better place. And once you get to that place and you're not thinking about yourself, everything you need comes to you anyway. But there's nothing more satisfying than that. So I think that's ultimately greatness. So
very cool.
And my last message to the people who are listening is, please go try this demo of Holosync, find out a little more about it. I know that my explanation of it is a little on the scientific side. the people that use this become happier, more peaceful, more loving, more compassionate, more effective in what they're doing in the world. And I mean, I could have talked about this from a much more emotional, motivational perspective. But I find that people really like understanding kind of the scientific background of why this sort of thing works and why even meditation works. So anyway, please do go check this out. It's very cool.
Awesome. Yeah, we'll have it linked up and make sure everyone checks it out. I appreciate you coming on so much, Bill, and thanks for all that you're doing in the world to create more awareness for us. I really appreciate you coming on and sharing.
My pleasure. I really appreciate the invitation.
Thank you again, guys, so much for being on here today. Hopefully you enjoyed this episode. If you did like it, go ahead back over to lewishouse.com/106. Leave a comment over on the blog and what you thought about this episode, and also share it with your friends. Share it with someone who you think could use this information, could use meditation in their lives, and could have who would want to have access to this type of research, this type of knowledge, and also have them check out the show notes. We've got something linked up there on how you can go get a free sample download of this so you can try it out and see if it works for you. Again, for me, I love guided meditations. I love listening to meditations because it helps me stay more connected. So if someone's wanting to start this out, definitely check it out over at the blog, lewishouse.com/106. Super pumped for all the guests we've got coming up. We've got a couple of huge names coming up here in the next couple weeks. You are definitely going to want to make sure you are subscribed to this and get access to it instantly, because I'm going to ask, I've got three people that I've always wanted to have on this show, and one of them we're going to be having on in the next week. So get ready for that. It's going to be a big one. Super excited. And you guys know what time it is. It's time to go out there and do something great.